ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय sarva sadguna mahatmye esha krishnam anubhata antideva ivodara yayachir ivadharmita sarva sadguna mahatmye Esha Krishnam Anubhata Antideva Ivodhara Yayathir Ivadharmika Sarva Sadguna Mahatmye Esha Krishnam Anubhata Antideva Ivodhara Sadguna Mahatmye, glorified by all godly attributes. Esha, this child, Krishnam, like Lord Krishna, Anuvrata, a follower in his footsteps. Rantideva, Rantideva, Iva, like, Udara, in the matter of magnanimity, Yayati, Yayati, Iva, like, Dharanika, concerning religion. Translation. This child will be almost as good as Lord Sri Krishna by following in his footsteps. In magnanimity, he will become as great as King Rantidev, and in religion, he will be like Maharaj Yayati. Purport. The last instruction of Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is that one should give up everything and should follow in the footsteps of the Lord alone. Less intelligent persons do not agree to this great instruction of the Lord. As ill luck would have it, the one who is actually intelligent catches up this sublime instruction and is immensely benefited. Foolish people do not know that association is the cause of acquiring qualities. Association with fire makes an object hot, even in the material sense. Therefore, association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead makes him qualified like the Lord. As we have discussed previously, one can achieve 78% of the godly qualities of the Lord's intimate association. 78% of the godly qualities by the Lord's intimate association. To follow the instructions of the Lord is to associate with the Lord. The Lord is not a material object whose presence one has to feel for such association. The Lord is present everywhere and at all times. It is quite possible to have his association simply by following his instruction, because the Lord in his instruction and the Lord in his name, fame, attributes, and paraphernalia are all identical with him, being absolute knowledge. Maharaj Parikit associated with the Lord even from the womb of his mother up to the last day of his valuable life. And thus he acquired all the essential good qualities of the Lord in all perfection. Rantideva. an ancient king prior to the Mahabharata period, referred to by Narad Muni while instructing Sanjaya, as mentioned in Mahabharata, Dronaparva 67. He was a great king, liberal for hospitality, and distributed foodstuff. Even Lord Sri Krishna praised his acts of charity and hospitality. He was blessed by the great Vasishtha Muni for supplying him cold water, and thus he achieved the heavenly planet. He used to supply fruits, roots, and leaves to the rishis, and thus he was blessed by them with fulfillment of his desires. Although a Kshatriya by birth, he never ate flesh in his life. He was especially hospitable to Vasishtha Muni, and by his blessings only he attained the higher planetary residence. He is one of those pious kings whose names are remembered in the morning and evening. Yayati. The great emperor of the world and the original forefather of all the great nations of the world who belong to the Arya and Indo-European stock. He is the son of Maharaj Nahusha, and he became the emperor of the world due to his elder brothers becoming a great and liberated saintly mystic. He ruled over the world for several thousands of years and performed many sacrifices and pious activities recorded in history. Although his early youth was very lustful and full of romantic stories, he fell in love with Devayanti, the most beloved daughter of Sukracharya. Devayani wished to marry him, but at first he refused to accept her because of her being a daughter of a Brahmana. According to Shastras, a Brahmana should marry the daughter. According to Shastras, a Brahmana could marry the daughter of a Brahmana. They were very much cautious about Varnashankara population in the world. Shukracharya amended this law of forbidden marriage and induced Emperor Yayati to accept Devayani. Devayani had a girlfriend named Sarmishta, who also fell in love with the emperor and thus went with her friend Devayani. Shukracharya forbade Emperor Yayati to call Sarmishta to his bedroom, but Yayati could not strictly follow his instruction. He secretly married Sarmishta and begot sons by her. When this was known by Devayani, she went to her father and lodged a complaint. Yayati was very much attached to Devayani, and when he went to his father-in-law's place to call her, Sukracharya was angry with him and cursed him to become impotent. Yayati begged his father-in-law to withdraw his curse, but the sage asked Yayati to ask youthfulness from his sons and let them become old as the condition of his becoming potent. He had five sons, two from Devayani and three from Sarmishta. From his five sons, namely Yadhu, Turvasu, Druhyu, Anu, and Puru, five famous dynasties, namely the Yadu dynasty, the Yavana dynasty, Turk dynasty, the Bhoja dynasty, the Malecha dynasty, Greeks, and the Paurava dynasty, all emanated to spread all over the world. He reached the heavenly planets by dint of his pious acts, but he fell down from there because of his self-advertisement and criticizing other great souls. After his fall, his daughter and grandson bestowed upon him their accumulated virtues, and by the help of his grandson and friend Shibi, he was again promoted to the heavenly kingdom, becoming one of the assembled members of Yamaraj, with whom he is staying as a devotee. He performed more than 1,000 different sacrifices, gave in charity very liberally, and was a very influential king. His majestic power was felt all over the world. His youngest son agreed to award him his youthfulness when he was troubled with lustful desires, even for 1,000 years. Finally, he became detached from worldly life and returned the youthfulness again to his son Puru. He wanted to hand over the kingdom to Puru, but his noblemen and the subjects did not agree. But when he explained to his subjects the greatness of Puru, they agreed to accept Puru as the king, and thus Emperor Yayati retired from family life and left for the home for the forest. So here is a description of Maharaj Parikit and by the Brahmins. So this is very significant because the qualities of the leader is what is important. The family line, these other things are checked, because then you're assured of good character, good qualities. So, but the most important thing is that, the qualities of goodness. We see here Pratikit Maharaj being installed on the throne because of his good qualities, or Pudu being installed on the throne because of his good qualities. The others were not. They didn't have the qualities. They didn't have the character. So here, then, so the character then is the most important. But in here we see is the character is very broad. It means if we look at this, this is what I'm going to touch on now is actually a dangerous topic, because it can be used to elevate one, it can be used to degrade one. Because we see here the broad-mindedness of the sages. They see what's good, and what's not good, they leave if it's not going to overpower the bad. Right? Here we've had so many descriptions of here of the two, in Maharaj Rantidev, then we see there's no qualities that are lacking. In Pariket there's no qualities that are lacking. In Yayati we see seemingly many qualities are lacking. He criticized devotees, from that he fell from the heavenly planets, he was proud. Because of that he fell. He had so much lust, so much material desire. You know, he couldn't control his senses on certain platforms. But it is important to note that the Mahabharata says that whatever he did in engaging his senses were not against the religious principles. That is something to keep in mind. So then here we see is that it would appear that, well, this kind of person, he has a fault. And so by the modern paradigm of all or nothing, Yayati is a write-off. But we see he is glorified as the head of this line. He's the one who starts this line. Right? He is a very great personality. Or like Puru Ravas, he's the one who introduced Yajna. Even though he had such great attachment for Purvasi. So now, here comes the point, is how much are we going to take seriously faults in the devotees? This is a point to be gained from here. Because if we take it, unless there is perfection, then there is nothing to gain. Then, unfortunately, we're in the wrong age. Satyayuga, you may find those really perfect people. Because, as we see here, Rantidev, just mention ancient king prior to the Mahabharata period. Mahabharata goes back a long ways. It goes back to Shantanu. No, not Shantanu. Uparichara Vasu. So then, you'd have to go way back. And in the Kali Yuga, everyone is born Sudra. That means they're born okay. And after that, it's downhill all the way. Right? Because even those in Malecha and Yavana families are born Sudras. But by association with their community, then they become Malechas and Yavanas. But that's as good as it gets. Right? That's as good as it gets, Shudra. By the devotional process, one can become a Brahmin. By the devotional process, one develops these good qualities. So what's good is appreciated. What's not good is avoided. And if the one doesn't overpower the other, then it's accepted. So if we look at it, and we look back at the history of our society, then we have to see is how much benefit was there in criticizing devotees. Basically, you could say up to 73, Criticizing devotees was not fashionable. People came and went. People did well, had problems. Life went on. Everyone was inspired. It worked. From 73, it became very fashionable to criticize. And if anyone blooped, anything that they did was considered a write-off and was removed from the annals of history. Right? Of course, devotees are ahead of their time. They were 11 years ahead of time. But, like that. But whatever, they started from 73 instead of 84. So it was removed. Anything they did was bad. Had no value, nothing. And if you look at it, is there inspiration? Prabhupada said, be amazed who stays, not who leaves. The one's asking the impossible. So who does it? That's special. Right? So this is something important, just like an interesting point. Is from 75, one never heard anything about someone like Vishnu John. He disappeared, no one knew what happened. And that was it. No one spoke about him, no one sang his songs, no one used his tunes, no one did anything. And so whatever great was there was lost. Recently somebody's put together a book, found some nice things, and devotees are inspired, and you can sing his tunes again, and it's not considered bad. So therefore one should look at it actually how much one wants to involve oneself in this. It didn't work for Yayati. You know, he criticized. It didn't work for Chapla Bhopal. He was a Brahmin, qualified Brahmin, elevated Brahmin. Didn't work for him. So we actually have to think is that what is good is taken and what's useless is avoided. Whatever avoiding means, if that means avoiding the association or not discussing it or staying out of the way, whatever it means, depending on how major or minor it is. So then that becomes an important element. So we see as good qualities, so this is the point. This is the danger. If we apply this principle that I'm talking about now on others, it will work to your advantage. And if you use this principle on yourself, you'll go to hell. That's where the danger lies. Because in this age, religion is taken as irreligion, irreligion is taken as religion. So what you should do for others, the broad-mindedness for others, we have for ourselves. We're very broad-minded towards ourselves, you know. You know, we're a great guy, you know. Everyone should understand. How many times have you heard somebody say, you have to understand, right? Do they ever say, we all have to understand? No, it's always a one-way street. Everybody else has to understand. Never we have to understand. I do something out of my sentiment or my emotions or that. Everybody else has to understand. Not like, well, maybe I made a mistake. Okay, I acted out of my emotions. It happened. Okay, let's move on. Learn from my mistakes. No, I got to be right. So everybody else has got to adjust. Even if it means going against all cultural and social and philosophical principles. No, I can never be wrong. Right? So it's not progressive. So we see if when religion is taken as irreligion, irreligion is religion, then we have a problem. A great problem. So that's why it's very important that we see is that here so many great things can be gotten from so many people. But still, that doesn't mean that we ourselves aren't careful of that. Not that, okay, because Bhima was overeating, therefore it's okay. Or because Nakula and Sahadeva, they were proud of their personal beauty or their intelligence. Or because Draupadi was partial to one of her husbands. you know, all the, that they did it, it's okay. No, those are weaknesses, and you see, it didn't get him a good result. Right? So that, but everything else that they did, that's exemplary. Even someone like Karna, his charity is exemplary. To the point where even the results of it Krishna asked for. Everybody else gives in charity, but no one gave in charity like Karna. So therefore, Krishna was attracted. But you give me the results of that. Then everything else is... Didn't mean he didn't get the bad results of harassing the Pandavas, but it just means that he's done that. He's, so he's accredited for that. He's also accredited for being, having, you know, the mood of a Kshatriya, you know. He wants to fight rather than be political. Shakuni wants to be political, Karna wants to fight. That's glorified. At the same time, his attitude against the Pandavas, that's not glorified. That's a big weakness. Therefore, he's considered the son of a charioteer. Because why would he find fault in someone as great as Arjuna? Yeah, other kings aren't finding fault. They see him as an enemy. Jarasandha never criticizes Arjuna. He may have things to say about Krishna. Right? You know, his only fault with Arjuna is that he's not physically strong enough, right? Arjuna is not, doesn't have the strength of 10,000 elephants. Jarasandha does. Bhima does. So he figures that's a good match. Like that. Because otherwise, then he could have said, yeah, let's fight on the chariots, bows and arrows, and he'll fight with Arjuna. But he knew he couldn't win there. So he had respect. So the point is what's good, you take. What's not good, you leave. And depending upon time, place, and circumstance, you choose how it's left. It may be something that you can associate, but just leave that particular situation. You don't associate under that circumstances. Or you don't bring up the topic so it doesn't come up. Or you may have to avoid association. That doesn't matter. But this all or nothing principle then is okay as long as you apply it to yourself. But then we might find ourselves as faults. And then, you know, then it's all or nothing. Right? So then we can't be spiritualized material. But are we successful in material life? So there's all or nothing of that. So then that means, okay, then we go for impersonalism. You can't get that. So then all or nothing, then we go for Buddhism. You can't get that either. So now what are you going to do? So it doesn't work as a principle. That's what the materialists do. The karma is all enjoyment, forget the future. The impersonalists is forget all the activities, all emotions, all anything, and just focus on liberation. Then frustration in that creates Buddhism, which is, you know, it means they chose the nothing. Right? And that doesn't work either. So we see is the personal interaction, the personal development, that's what's important. That will get us somewhere. What's good, take it, use it, move forward. This is one of the important aspects of Brahminical culture, is that any failing that one has had, one learns from it and moves on. One doesn't lament about it, one doesn't beat oneself over the head with it. But that doesn't mean that you just write it off, oh, no big problem, because that's motive passion. Motive passion is failure, oh, no big deal. Motive goodness is, failure is there, I learn from that, move on. I'll try to not make that mistake again. That's the difference. Passion is, they still move on and they go and keep going until they're successful. But failures to them is no big deal because they're just trying to get the result. So it's more progressive than the mode of ignorance, which there is no activity and there is no progression. But it's not as good as goodness, which is progression, and there's not that desire for the fruit of result. Okay, so here then, in the good qualities, then he'll be almost as good as Lord Krishna. Means he'll have all the qualities of Krishna, but not in the as great an amount. Like it says, 78% we can gain. And like that, he will be like Krishna by following his instructions, by always remembering him, by always being absorbed in him. Then he becomes as good as. This is the meaning. By association, you become as good as. So this is the thing. We associate with Prabhupada through his books. You become as almost as good as. The same spiritual standard. We associate with Krishna's instructions, his name, form, qualities, pastimes. You become almost as good as. But it's not impersonal because there must be some common point to create relationship. Right? Because we're spiritual, then we can have a relationship with Krishna, who is spiritual. Does that make sense? So the common point is to create relationship, right? Let's say you want to make a relationship with somebody. You first look for what's the common point. Then you establish a relationship based on that. Then you expand from there. But if there's no common point, how do you have relationships? So unless the living entity is almost as good as the Lord and his devotees, how do they associate? So that's the principle. So then, and Ranti Dev, his magnanimity, he would give everything. The example is he had been fasting for a mandala. And then when he was going to eat, then so many, all the demigods came and took different forms to trick him and get what he was going to eat, until all he had was a glass of water, and then they even came and took that, but he gave it. He didn't say, hey, I've been doing a fast for 41 days, you know, give me a break, you know. He didn't say that. One could say that from the platform of justice. Hey, okay, you didn't eat today, I haven't eaten for 41 days, you know, add it up. You know, so then, but he doesn't. He sees these people have come, they're dependent, they want charity, I give, and they're happy. So he's glorified. And then in Yayati, a great, and in religion, he'll be like Maharaj Yayati. So one can say, well, Yayati was very lusty, but everything was according to religious principles. What was the point? At the end of life, he left for the forest. He wanted to go to the forest and leave the lust behind. Right? The kids can have it. Right? And he's going to go to the forest without it. So therefore, then, he went through it, but according to religious principles. That point is made many times in the Mahabharata. He said he enjoyed his senses as to the best of his ability and to the maximum that he could, all according to religious principles. He's going to eat, he'll eat nicely, and he'll eat how much he wants. You know, whatever he's going to do it fully. But all according to religious principles. And therefore, then the result was, he was freed from that, went to the forest. That's the point. It's not just a matter of one's annoyed with it, that's an impetus to give it up. But one also has to be willing to give it up. Right? It's like this. There's one kind of renunciation that it annoys me today, so I give it up. But if tomorrow it doesn't annoy me, then there's no need to give it up. But the point is whether it's annoying or nice, there's no need. So that's the point. That's why the interactions and that in the Vaishnava community are supposed to be of a good caliber, a good character. Because then one sees that on the mundane platform there is interaction, there's nice, there's pleasantness, there's good interaction, everything is wonderful, but still it doesn't satisfy. Why? Because it's still the material situation. Rather than, oh, any interaction, anything that's pleasant is Maya. No. Why is it unpleasant is not Maya. That's the thing to think about. Right? If all the men and women are all poker-faced and don't interact with each other, great. But why is that Krishna conscious and pleasantly interacting is not? They're both mundane. Now you can say, okay, I don't bother with that, I just remember Krishna. Then, yes, that's something different. But just to not interact, that's not necessarily spiritual. You know what I'm saying? But here, Yayati is pointing out, your interaction must be according to religious principles. Right? Does this make some sense? And that's why religion is there, is because people want to interact, but there's rules. One person's interaction can't enter into another person's area of interaction. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why it's there. Means the parent interacts with the kid has friends. The parent, of course, wants to see that the child is interacting properly with friends, and the quality of friends are like-minded. But to say, no, you're exclusively mine, and only I'll interact with you, and you won't interact with your friends, that's irreligious. That's sinful, because you're stepping into the child's right of friendship. But the child's right of friendship can't infringe upon the parent's authority and, you know, their interaction either. It can't be when it's time to be with the parents and they're off with friends. Or when it's time for the parents to be with the children, they're off at the spa. You know? Like this. So this is the thing. Problem is, it's seemingly restrictive. But the point is, why is the mother at the spa instead of with the kids? Because she's looking for some taste. But it's when the opportunity for one is there, she's not taking that, she's doing something else. So this is the Kali Yuga disease. Religion is seen as irreligion, irreligion is seen as religion. So what should be done is avoided as either unnecessary or restrictive or politically incorrect, or go on, name it. There's tons of nice euphemistic terms that basically are just different terms for demoniac. That's what it is. The modern social system is demoniac. It has nothing to do with Krishna. We see here. Yadu is the Yadu dynasty. Turvasu is the Yavana, the Turk dynasty. Right? Then Anu is the Malecha, the Greek dynasty. Right? Anu, he went to the far west, and he went and cultivated all the people out there in the Fertile Crescent. Right? And so he was the king of that area. Because they started up there, the Turks, and then they moved down to Greece and that. I mean, yeah. The Greeks started up there and they came down. Those are the Palindas. So then we see is that's the foundation of the whole Western civilization. So if it's based on that, how will it be good? Something may be useful. But whatever is useful of anything in the Western culture, you'll see it comes from religion. This is an important point to note. There's nothing good, there's nothing regulative in society, there's no social good that comes out of anywhere other than religion. Right? That's the way it is. You take the Vedas, then you remove that, then you reestablish, then you move, then you get the Zoroastrians. Then that becomes farther removed, you get Judaism. That becomes separated, you get, you know, your different varieties of Christianity that still follow some of the other principles. Then you separate that again, you get your Protestant, which basically cuts out everything other than Jesus. Right? And then you cut him out of the equation, and then you try to say, be nice, be good, but why be nice, be good? Who said? What does it matter? Right? Unless God or one of his representatives to say be nice and be good, why? What's the big deal of being nice and good? Who said, under whose authority, should we be nice, should we be good, should we be pleasant, should we be interactive? Why? Right? That's the thing. We want to be politically correct. Why? Why should we be nice? The reason we're being nice is to get a result. So if result is the goal, I can get the result by being not nice. So why be nice? Explain it. There is no explanation other than from religion. Because you can say, well, it's better, it's not. Well, why? Under what reason? Right? The lion perfectly naturally goes out and catches this nice, gentle deer. Right? That's not nice. The butterfly is flying along so sweetly, and then the swallow comes down and eats it. You know? So, what's nice? That's the point. We want to create, and why would there even be a concept of niceness? Why be nice? Because niceness gives more a feeling of sense of well-being than not niceness. Seemingly, for someone more pious. Impious people, they feel good. They'd sit around and joke. Yeah, we went out, made a hit today, and, you know, got the guy plus three mushrooms. And they think it's great. They think it's funny. Mushroom means innocent bystanders who just happen to be standing next to the guy that they wanted to shoot. You know, and they laugh about it. They feel good. So it's all perception, how you look at it. So that's the problem. The material world basically boils down to perception, and there's 8,400,000 types of it. So the question is, do we want to have Krishna's perception and therefore be like him and be like these other great personalities? Or we want our own perception? Right? And then it's the law of the jungle. Right? The jungle works only because it's Krishna's modes of nature is running it. But it's not necessarily peaceful. It's not necessarily secure. You look at it, it looks so nice and wonderful. You know, but at every second somebody's eating somebody, you know, out there on the savanna. You know, it's all happening. You know? So, yeah. So the idea is that then these good qualities can be taken. That will inspire us. That also makes our own spiritual life much easier. Instead of saying, I don't see those great, you know, Vaishnavas and all this and that, so how can I go on? No. Every devotee has something nice. There's always devotees that are inspiring in some aspect. You take, write down, what aspects of devotional service are important for you? Right? Someone will be chanting, someone will be detachment, someone will be, you know, service, someone will be, you know, study, some, whatever it is. Then think of devotees in the society. Is there anybody who's good at any of those? And if there are, then they can set example for that aspect. Maybe the rest of it they don't set an example. That doesn't matter. But that one they do. And you put that together and then you have a complete package. That's why a society is created. In other ages, the qualities were such and people's absorption were such, you could tell them what was right, they could contemplate it and go out and do it. That's why Upanishads were enough. It just gives the hint at the point, they would contemplate it, come to the right conclusion, do it. This age, you have to have example. Therefore, Puranas, right? And here, you know, Runti Dave is known for being magnanimous. He's not known for being a great archer. Arjuna is known as a great archer. He's not known as being magnanimous. It doesn't mean he wasn't magnanimous, but his outstanding quality was being a great archer. So then one can take, that's why it's society. There's always somebody you can find some good quality in and find inspiration. But if we're looking for that perfect person in everybody, otherwise we can't function, then we're going to be disappointed for many lifetimes. Because Krishna can easily arrange, we can't find anyone good. Right? We've all heard this story. Duryodhana was sent out. He could not find one good man on the whole planet. Right? And at the time, Maharaj Ugrasena had a personal bodyguard in Dwarka of 10 trillion foot soldiers. Right? So he was looking at a lot more people than are on the planet today. Right? And he couldn't find one, not one. So if you want to be like Duryodhana, birth after birth after birth, Krishna will arrange it. Krishna, give whatever faith you have, understand it comes from Krishna, and Krishna will give you whatever faith you want. Right? Those who have faith in the demigods, demigods can't create faith. Right? Krishna has to create it in you. You want it, Krishna will create it. So if you want to be faithless, Krishna can create that also. You can look, see nothing. Right? So that's easy. Right? That's easy. So this faith is very important. And then to see like this, take the good qualities. Someone has many, great. The more they have, the better. Someone has only one. Someone has only one in a partial. That's appreciated. That's enough. And then we appreciate like that, we'll gain. Because if you appreciate, you gain the good quality. If you don't appreciate, you gain that bad quality. That's how it works. That's the science. You ever wonder how, you know, we know that there's karma and there's mystic things. You eat someone else's food that's given, you take on their karma or consciousness depending upon the nature of the food. Like this. So you talk about someone's qualities, you talk about their bad qualities, you take them on. That's how someone gets rid of them. Did you know that? Like that. That's why it's avoided. There was once a woman. She had done something wrong. And so then that wrong was multiplied like millions of times when she got down to the, you know, Yamaraj. So then in the discussion, then somehow or another, how it worked out exactly, I don't remember the details, but she was asking how to get rid of this reaction. So then Yamaraj told her, then you go back to your situation and you act in a way that others will criticize you. Don't do anything wrong, but act as if you would you act like someone who would be doing something wrong. Then everyone will see this, they'll criticize you. And every time they criticize you, then they take on your reactions. So like this, then she went for it, and everybody criticized her, and very quickly she got rid of all her reactions. Like that. But that's the science, that's how it's trained, that's the metaphysical science, how you're better. By purification they go, but also by others criticizing you, they take. That's why the pure Vaishnavas do not, they feel it kind upon them that you criticize them. Because you're taking their bad qualities by doing that. So they feel you're doing them a great service. They thank you for it. You know, one would think, oh, because they're just humble, that they're humble that they can take that position and not get absorbed in justice. This, I'm not wrong. Why are they saying? No. But that's how it goes. You take that don't you, have you ever noticed the phenomena that the person who criticizes someone for a quality after a while starts doing that thing? That irony always, that's because that's what's happening. You criticize, you always notice, then you always take that on till the point it increases, till it becomes your value and activity. That's the method. Well, if you appreciate the good qualities in devotees, then you're good. Right? If you notice, someone who's very pure doesn't see bad qualities. Right? So they're not taking any bad qualities either. And someone who's bad never sees any good qualities. They only talk about people's bad qualities. They don't manifest good. Right? Think about it. I mean, these aren't coincidences. These are actual, you know, the way the material world is designed. So this is one of the things. So by your performance of sadhana, that so many things will go. By devotion in performance of that sadhana, that's where you get rid of the seeds, right? And by others criticizing you, it won't get rid of the seed, but it'll take away the reaction. So unless you're trying to get rid of the root of it, then it will come up again. I mean, even if they've taken it all away, you're still going to do it again because the desire for it's there. So that's why the devotion. So this is nice, huh? Yeah. I'm not sure if we got anywhere in this class. We went around in circles. Main thing is to point out is that the qualities, Yudhishthira Maharaj is looking for his qualities. Because if he's good, then he'll be established. Like we see here is that, because it's not that just someone is put in a position. It has to be approved. It's said here that Yayati wanted to put Puru, but his noblemen and subjects did not agree. So this is the second time, I mean, I can think of it, that it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that these three things have to be in place. The king puts another king in place because, one, he's satisfied, two, the nobleman is satisfied, three, the subjects. So in other words, in our scenario, means one manager establishes another manager that he thinks is fit, that other senior devotees and people who will be managing with him think are fit, and the devotees under him that they will be responsible for think he's fit. Those are the three things. Anything else other than that's politics. This is real politics. Like that. This is what's supported by the Vedas. So we see here Yayati followed the same principle, and the same principle we see with Maharaj Uttanapada establishing Dhruva Maharaj on the throne. He followed the same. Details are given there. He went to his ministers and the senior members of the court, asked them, then after that, then, you know, you don't take a vote, he just sends people out. He has his methods to get, you know, someone goes into the square and starts talking. Yeah, I heard they were talking about, you know, establishing Dhruva on the throne because his brother Uttam was killed. You know, I don't know if, you know, you think that's a good idea, you know, I mean, he's the younger brother, you know, like that. And then people say, no, no, he's very good, that, or someone may say, yeah, yeah, you know. So then he goes back and he finds out and he says, no, the people like him. His ministers and that like him. And so then. So this is the method. Any questions on this? Or yes?
You were making a presentation of thinking in the recent times, talking about in 300 years, so many different groups would come from a particular point and place like Guru. They would start conquering different places. But the main desire of this particular society is to defeat some bad power, arrogance or conquer the world, barbarism, plunder, etc. So we also, the society, we have a purpose to conquer the world.
Mm-hmm.
What is our desire? What will be ours? What we bring into the world we want to conquer?
Okay. So, question is that if we look at, you know, history, that, you know, since Prabhupada had mentioned here the European history and stuff, that the so many want to conquer the world or conquer parts of the world, but in doing that they just bring in bad qualities. They bring in their avarice, their pride, their different things. There's not necessarily benefit. So the question is what benefit are we trying to give by conquering the world through Krishna consciousness? Well, Prabhupada, the main thing, of course, is by becoming Krishna conscious, then one actually situates oneself properly, goes back to Godhead. Then, with that, then a side benefit of that, people have knowledge, people have a proper understanding, they have a lifestyle by which they can actually live peacefully. So by establishing Krishna in the center, you actually establish peace. That's the peace formula. Krishna is the enjoyer, Krishna is the controller, and Krishna is the friend. Because all problems come because people think that they are those three. And they're not necessarily performing the activities of those three according to religious principles. They're not enjoying according to religious principles, and not controlling according to religious principles, and not befriending others according to religious principles. Befriending, giving in charity, taking care, you know, taking care of dependents. That's the meaning here. Because otherwise, then you have the control and enjoy, and then your dependence, and you feel, you know, something is there. Whatever it is, it's family, or community, or country, or, you know, like that. So that is what is being offered by the Krishna consciousness movement. It's an alternative to the, you know, materialistic society that's its only purpose is to enjoy the senses, so therefore you try to control it. You know, so they're not, relationships are only a method to get to their goal. But in the Vedic, then, and their goal is lust. But in the Vedic, then, the relationships aren't a method. Relationships are the foundation by which then you taste, you know, you please Krishna and taste that love in interacting with Krishna and his devotees. So there's a slight difference in the focus. Here's, you want the friendship because you'll get something from it. There is, you want the friendship because the other will get something from it. So it's slightly different. Relationship can't be avoided, but if it's for the other to benefit, then it's actually personal. And if it's for ourselves to benefit, then it's actually impersonal. Like that. But it's done because we're persons. You know, the bottom line is we can't actually even be impersonalists because we're persons. We can't do it. The reason that we want to be impersonal or give it up or we're bitter or this is because we're personal and our feelings and other things have been disturbed. So it's because of being a person that we take up impersonal. Yeah, that's the reality. So that's what is there to be offered. Is that okay?
I was thinking also in a personal way. We are representing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one person is conquering. So when we are, like a soldier comes with the religions, which comes with an issue.
Oh, what is our method?
How individually, how we present to the world?
Individually, how we should present Krishna consciousness. Our attitude, how we present it. How do we present to the world? The main thing is service. But each person will be individual. Someone will do it through leadership, someone will do it through their personal qualities, like that example, someone will do it through, you know, making programs, or that's what the beauty of it is whatever one's conditioned nature, there's something one can do for Krishna. And use that to attract others to Krishna. Like that. So that doesn't matter. So I think we'll end the class here, and then we'll continue with question and answers wherever we'd like to stay. And that. So we'll thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadhita Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaurava Prema.
We're ending early because of that, because someone pointed out that a lot of people want to go, they left and head home, they stay.
Yeah. Oh, but there's a celebration of the Vikas Swami's.
Oh, yeah.
Got the new service.
Design and graphics for the Mayapur project. I didn't. I don't. So I have to get Krishna Das to show me for it. I mean, I think it's really good. Yeah, but it just happened.
Hare Krishna.
Good to hear you. Yeah.
Yes, Prabhu. Oh, okay. So the question is this: what happens if someone does something to us that we feel is improper, and within our mind we criticize, but we don't actually verbalize it to anyone else? So it will have less effect, but it still will pollute the mind, still that we start to draw that quality. That's why Krishna in the Gita says that one should give up this sense of personal justice. That doesn't mean we don't act according to justice, acting according to what's proper, but it doesn't mean that our purpose of acting is for justice. Because justice is the platform of pranamoy. It's still considered sensual, but extended like that. So it's still better than just gross sensuality. So someone on that platform of justice is better than, you know, the animals, better than animalistic people, self-centered people, better than scientists, you know, better than, you know, these tantrics. It's still a better level because others' concern is yours, but it's still their senses only. You haven't gotten to actually them who is, you're not even really recognizing the subtle body. That's why people who are very absorbed in more morality, then they don't see the subtle. They can only see what they physically see in front of them because the senses are within the body. What the body does is all far they can see. That's the weakness of that platform of consciousness. What others say, what you see with your senses, but other senses. What you see with your senses for yourself, that's anamaya. What you see with your senses for other senses, that's pranamaya. But it still is external. Because religious principles, then you have to be able to understand the subtle body, because that's where they function. They function the platform of mind. So then that's more of an experience. Someone else does something, so therefore then there's an experience of it. Though it's not perceived by the senses. You know, the example is given when you sleep. When you wake up in the morning, you say, I had a good sleep. But you can't perceive that good sleep with your senses. You can only understand it was there. So that's called aparoksha, method of gaining knowledge. So it's a higher platform, it's much more subtle. So that's why you always see in the beginning, those who are religious, that is looked for. Those who are moralists, then all the acharyas kick them out in their introduction to their book. Because they'll never understand the subtle science of Krishna consciousness. They can't. They're barred from it because they can only perceive the senses. If they're religious and from the religious platform, then they can see what's moral because it's based on religious principles. That's okay. And the senses, they connect to religiosity, like Yayati said he was lusty, but he connected it to religion. So therefore, he's called a religious person. Maybe his religious needs are sensual, you know, instead of emotional or some other thing like that. But it's still religious like that, you know. Or you have Aditi's husband, Kasyapa, right? He is an impersonalist. But he was a householder and he was having his children, but his focus was on that. So he's known as an impersonalist. He's not known as a religious person. Because his consciousness is done on the next higher one, the adhoksita platform. He gains things through what is detachment from the world. Like that. Though it wasn't complete, therefore we have Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. His detachment wasn't as good in that situation. So that makes sense? So within the mind, then we have to forgiveness is the main quality of a Brahmin. Now here we saw something that said following Brahminical culture. And Lord Ramachandra was the best example of that. So he's like Ramachandra in following the Brahminical culture. Sometimes there's a misnomer that Brahminical cultures for Brahmins and Kshatriyas have their culture, Vaishyas have their culture, Shudras have their culture, because we're Westerners, we have our own culture, so we're our own unique blend of this and that, and we make ourselves something more special than we are. But the standard was Brahminical culture. Kshatriyas followed it, Vaishyas followed it. Shudras could follow it, should follow it. If they don't, it's not going to matter. Means they're still going to be Shudras. Of course, if they drop from the Shudra platform, then they become Lechas Yavas. But Brahmin Kshatriyas and Vaishyas follow Brahminical culture. That's why they're Dvijas. If a Vaishya is not following Brahminical culture, he's not a Vaishya. You know, like that. So so sometimes there's an idea like that. So forgiveness is the main quality of a Brahmin. So therefore, if you want to follow Brahminical culture, it's important. Kshatriyas have an issue with forgiveness. Vaishyas, because they get so much caught up in their morality and ethics, because without it you can't do business, then they also run into a problem with it. But Brahmins, because their position is that of Brahman and wanting to get out of the material world, therefore they forgive. So then that element one should see, well, what is it that bothers you? And is that important? And is it actually progressive? Right? Okay, if I maintain this position of justice, do I benefit? Does the other person benefit? Does anybody benefit from it? Is there something being established? It's one thing to establish justice, that's one thing. But the demand for justice for the devotee is not important. Because the material world, what is just about it? Right? We can say, no, it should be just, but is it just that the smallest is claiming that they're the greatest? The jiva is claiming to be God, is trying to take the position of God. So the whole material world is based on a lie. But Krishna is so kind and forgiving that he allows everyone to work within this lie and try to, you know, you can call, if you work according to God's principles in this lie, that's called pious. And if you get against his principles in the lie, it's called impious. But it's all a lie. So then trying to establish it. Is some point on this? So justice, the problem is justice is a political. Like we see, political correctness, we have to understand this, it means it's political. It may be seemingly accepted politic, but it's political, it's diplomatic. You know, that's the bottom line. Because it's a euphemism, it goes by and no one thinks about it, because it's just a term you always use and no one thinks about it. You know, just like we say, I gotta go to the bathroom. Bathroom means the room where you take a bath. But because that's a euphemism for the toilet, therefore it's accepted. You know, you know that it means you have to go to the toilet. You know? Because if you have to take a bath, you say, I'm gonna go take a bath. I don't say, I have to go to the bathroom. Right? Like that. So it's just understood. It's a nice, or I gotta have to go to the washroom. You know, there's so many, you know, each culture has its words. So we don't think about it. Well, politically correct means it's political. It's a political platform. It's a platform of pranamoy, of justice. And it has nothing to do with religion or liberation or spirituality, unless it's connected. Well, religion includes justice and sensuality. You know, liberation includes religion, justice, and sensuality. And bhakti for the conditioned soul includes all those other four. If it's done right. If it's done wrong, of course, one misses out. So, therefore, what is the religious principle that's here? Where does the justice point come from? It has to come from somewhere. It can't, otherwise, where did it come from? As we mentioned in the beginning, justice and what's good, morality and ethics have to come out of religion. They don't stand other than that. Otherwise, it's a free-for-all. You know? The deer thinks it's really great to be living and chewing on the grass, and the lion thinks it's really great to be chewing on the deer. So, can you say one perspective is right and one's wrong? Right? Because the food of the lion is the deer, so it's not wrong that he eats the deer. So, therefore, without God as a position to function from, how do you tell what's perspective, what's proper perspective? So then you see, what is the religious principle? What is it based on that this morale, this I'm feeling this justice, something's wrong? There must be a religious principle. You know? And religion is only useful, as Bhagavatam says, if it's directed towards the Supreme Lord. It shouldn't be used for economic development. And economic development is also the category of justice. Justice, morality, economics, it's all one space. It's just called by different names. If you want to look at the monetary value of it, it's called economics. If you want to look at the ethical part, you call it morality. If you want to call it that to make sure that you keep your money, your share, and someone else gets their fair share, or at least you get yours back from them, that's called justice. But otherwise, it's the same subject matter. So then that's based on religion, but religion is meant for elevation, not for sense gratification. So therefore, then it goes the other way. And liberation, real liberation, is devotion. So therefore, what would be pleasing to Krishna? So how could I act that is pleasing to Krishna? And what is the actual justice that I'm expecting? What does it look like in this proper social thing? You know, so then it starts to balance. And then if one's forgiving, then even that can be dropped and left with the devotion. If not, then one can try to adjust it in this bigger picture. But if one keeps it on the platform of justice, problem is then that takes, one has to go on and on to get one's justice.
Right? It's also relative.
What happens? There's also a prohibition against marrying someone last being criticized or questioned. So, what is that? Is all those reactions coming to you when you hear also?
Yeah. It's like this: you hear the criticism, you also get the reaction. So, unless you do something about it by correcting them, by cutting out their tongue, or by leaving the place, then you will get reaction. That's why it's considered not good to stick around.
Now the philosophizing.
It means people can call it philosophizing, but that's their own opinion. And opinions don't matter. That's the thing, is now the point comes as my opinion is as good as your opinion, as good as Prabhupada's opinion, as good as Krishna's opinion, but that's just false ego. It's just people can't be wrong. Their sense of self-worth and self-justice is so great that they can't acknowledge that maybe there's a bigger picture they have to fit into. So this is an age-old dilemma. They killed Socrates for this. You know, the whole If you look at it, the Western philosophy, they want to say philosophy, yes. But what philosophy? It's sophist philosophy. The sophists are what's popular opinion. Because you see, this philosophy they're talking about is based on vox populi. And so they want to get rid of anyone who talks like Socrates, that there is an absolute truth and we have to bring ourselves in line with it. And the sophists are, no, we bring truth in line with ourselves. So it's an age-old thing. That's why traditionally people studied history, so that they would learn from it. You know, but unfortunately, you know, it's just one of those subjects that you either hate and don't pay attention, or you love it and just history for history's sake, right? So that's the whole. Does that make some sense? So it's yeah. Does that make some sense? You get anywhere?
Well, I'm trying to understand, like, what is it like when you're hearing, like, so on, there's different levels of things, like, I mean, what is it that, like, when does it come to a point where you have to leave, or leave them, or whatever they want? Because sometimes, I mean, this can be, oh, that's not nice. In a very subtle way.
Well, you have to see, as if they just mentioned that's not so nice and that's the end of it. So then, you know, then you have to decide. Do you agree with that? What would be the best situation? What would be, can you say something that would change this person's opinion? Or you wouldn't be able to say anything to change their opinion, so therefore you don't say anything, but as long as they don't continue talking, you'll stick around and change the subject. But if not, then you'll excuse yourself. Point is you have a responsibility. So it's never good. That's why criticizing is never, it's not part of the Vedic culture. You don't find it. I mean, in the whole of Mahabharata, who do we find criticizing anyone? Actually criticizing. That's not constructive. You only hear really Duryodhana, Shishupal, Shakuni. You just hear the demons do it. It's not good. Bhima, Draupadi sometimes make criticism of Yudhishthira, but for his benefit. They're making a comment for his benefit. And they're wanting his benefit. Yeah, in front of him, and they're doing it for, according to religious principles. They're not, their comment's not based on, they may have the wrong perspective on the religious principle, but still they're trying to base it on a religious principle. And because they do want, their purpose is absolute truth, therefore they are happy to hear if it's corrected. You know, means Draupadi has an atheistic view on the religious principle of a king's duty, and Yudhishthira Maharaj points it out like that. So it's done. She has the right to bring it up in a cultural way, and he has the right to then correct her. Bhima also brings it up. Because Bhima's thing is, he's strong, just go in there and just smash them all, kill them all, this and that. Because on the platform of Niti, we don't need, they're not religious people anyway. See, it's one thing is, if they were religious, acting as a religious person, then we acting as religious, that is proper, good, yes, we must do it. But these guys are just sinful. So why do we have to be gentlemen with these sinful people? Therefore, you know, right there in the assembly, Bhima was so mad, so angry. I mean, smoke, it was coming out of his ears. Sparks were coming out of his eyes. These aren't, you know, just, you know, some poetic. This is what was happening. He was that angry. Huh? Is it possible for the human body? I guess if somebody gets that angry, then yes. But I think you'd have to be as strong as 10,000 elephants to handle it. You know, you don't hear of anybody else that happening, but it was hot. So at that moment, if Yudhishthira had given me approval, he would have picked up his gloves, and except for Drona and Bhima, Everybody in that court would have been history, easily. No one would have been able to stand up for him. But you distributed the gifts. So his point is, you know, why not? They're sinful. There's no need. They're acting sinfully. They're insulting our wife. It's against her. You can't do that. But Yudhishthira's thing was no, because Dhritarashtra is our, like our father. He was approving it, therefore we're following. You know, we've given our word, we follow our word. They don't follow their word, that's their problem. So that's the religious platform. Bhima was taking the platform of justice, of niti, ethics. Because ethics is just how you get something done in the most efficient way possible. Right? There's no, generally no loss in ethics. Right? It means you lose for a gain. Okay, I lose this much land, but I'll gain this much. You know, I'll lose, you know, it's give and take, it's business. Ethics is business. Well, religion is not. I mean, it does have a business element, but it's a little more hidden. The personality means the personal interactions become more prominent. Because you're giving up something here and you're gaining something higher, you know, on the material platform than heavenly pleasures and facilities. On the spiritual platform, you're going back to Godhead. So you can say that then because it's done for Krishna, it's not business. But in ethics, it's obviously business. You know. Does that make some sense? Still doesn't make sense. Okay. What doesn't make sense? Why it is you can't sit there while everybody else, it's not your fault, you didn't talk about it, you didn't bring it out, why you get the wrath? Yeah? It's just like this. I have an electric cable, and it's got live. And I come up and touch it with the end. Now, according to justice, you shouldn't get shocked, right? Because it has nothing to do with you. You're sitting there, and you're just minding your own business. And I walk up with this live wire and give you a zap. But the point is does it work like that? Do you not get shocked? No. So that's the way the subtle works also. Why the gross will work like that, the subtle will work like that. The spiritual works like that, right? The guy was a fisherman. He was out there catching fish. He was not out fishing around for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whatever it is, he fished out the Supreme Lord from the ocean, and then he's out there chanting Hare Krishna in ecstasy, and he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know what his family is going to think, what the other fishermen are going to think. He's freaking out. But he touched God, and he developed ecstasy. Right? So someone else's mentality that touches you, you will gain it, unless you do something about it. And if it's something gross, then the gross will have. Everything has a reaction.
Maharaj, they use not doors to yourself.
Yeah.
If you let these things enter, you
have to. Yeah. So the point is someone says something, so that's it. By going away or by saying something, then you're relieved of that. You know, or someone makes one comment, then you have to think about it and how it's not, that's not there. So even if it's not opportune to defend the person that was spoken against, it's still, you have to defend it in your own mind. Or work it out with the actual thing. What is wrong? Means that one may find a mistake, but it doesn't have to be a criticism. Just like here, we're saying that Yayati was lusty. But it's not a criticism. We're just stating the fact that he had a lot of material desire for lust and romance. Right here. It says he was very lustful and full of romantic stories. Right? So therefore then he connected that through religious principles and he engaged that and then he removed it. So it's not, these things aren't a fault if they're connected to Krishna. That's the point. they're not connected to Krishna, then what's the use? If it's connected to Krishna, then it's not a fault. Right? We're working on the premise that even pious activities are useless if they're not connected to Krishna. Right? And as he mentioned before, those who want to philosophize, you know, and bring in the modern is also equal footing with the Vedic, then that's not, how to say, what were we talking about before? I forget what's the point we're making. We're making it.
You mentioned something about what the
oh yeah, means finding the fault. Okay, so then finding the fault there means you connect what it is, what's the weakness in the religious principles or the application or whatever is the level of consciousness that you're working with. And so then how to correct that, what's proper? What's proper, what's improper? Does that make sense? So in other words, you can't be left with a doubt. If it creates a doubt, then you know you've been infected. If it doesn't create a doubt, and you've worked it out in your mind, but it's not opportune to say something, and as long as they don't say it anymore, that's that. But otherwise, you have to say something to leave. Yeah, you're saying that according to Dharma Shastra, if you keep silence, you agree. It's one of the ways of that. So that's how people will take it. If you're silent, you agree. Even if you're not agreeing, that's how it will be interpreted. So if you are silent and you're thinking about it, then you have to say, I'm thinking about it. Otherwise, people will take it that you agree.
We're saying these teachers from the Scottish church, they were adopting so much nonsense. He didn't want to correct them because he was not proper, so he just hear it if he was not more comfortable. Or like Don Lucia, he was a child, not to school with wrong things. He didn't correct him all the time.
Yeah, it means you have to balance. It means saying that things are being heard, but you have to see the time, place, and circumstance. But then you have to, in your own mind, work it out. You can't just let it go or let it create a doubt. Okay. This is a subtle point, but its main thing is don't criticize. Okay. Do you have an aversion or intolerance to pretentiousness, then what do you do? It depends. If it's somebody who is in your care to train or that, then you show them how it's not proper. But if it's not, you know, or if it's a friend that you could bring it up in the proper way, then you bring it up. If it's a senior, if there's a way to bring it, you can, but if not, then... Because the point is pretentiousness is there, but the point is what is real? You understand? Actual realness is Krishna consciousness. Everything else is actually not real. And even of, okay, now let's say you have a drama. So is a drama pretentious? You understand? If they play the part well, you say no. But if they're proud and they don't play it well, then you say they are. Does that make sense? So that's why you have to always take whatever is a problem to the next level up. You know, see where its source is. What is the problem? Pretentious means you have a false ego and you're not actually doing what is there. It means if they do well but have an attitude, an ego, then that's, you know, they're proud or they have an attitude, something like that. That's okay. But pretentious means is they're proud but don't effectively get it done. So now, what's the problem? The ego? Or not getting it well done? Do you have a problem if someone is does things very well, but is a little proud? Do you have a problem with that? Okay. What about people who just do things badly and are inept at doing things? Not so much. So then it's the ego that's the problem, not the pretentiousness. Because kids don't do things well either. You know. So.
When you are teaching them, what do you think you look pretentious and bad?
Yeah, that's true.
So it's not in your power to do anything about it?
If it's not in your power to do anything about it, then you ignore it or just let it go by. What will you do? I mean, what is your position? You're here to remove all pretentiousness of the world? Yada, yada, pretentiousness. Vanir bhavati yada. Whenever there is pretentiousness, I appear again and again. you know what I'm saying? What is the purpose? So, why? You can see that you avoid it yourself. Reflect, are you pretentious? Why is the sensitivity to pretentiousness? So there will only be a sensitivity to pretentiousness if that quality is there in the positive or negative in yourself. Either it was there and you've corrected it, or you have it and no fear, you can't tolerate in anyone else. You understand? Because you can only see something that you have the same nature as. Does that make sense? Because your eyes can reflect color, therefore you can see color. You understand? It works like that. Someone appreciates aesthetics, they can see aesthetics. Someone appreciates good arrangements or organization, they can see it. Someone who doesn't won't notice it. You know what I'm saying? Someone will only see pretentiousness if it's either there and it's negative in oneself, or one had that quality and was corrected. Either way. In other words, you just see what... You can only see what is there in yourself that reflects off of others. That's the method. Otherwise, you won't notice it. If you don't have ears, you can't hear. So unless the quality is there in some way or another, you won't. Or some connected quality. Pretentiousness may be part of something else. So it seems to be not the inept part is the problem. You know? So it seems to be ego. So then you'd have to look at, so is ego the problem? Maybe pretentious is just one form of small-time ego that annoys you. Big-time ego, maybe it's appreciated or not. And you have to see what qualities of ego are appreciated. Does that make sense? So like that you can analyze and see what's useful or not. Okay? Means, oh, okay. The question is that therefore, if you see it and it annoys you, should you just let it go? If it's something you can't do anything about and there's no need to do anything about it, then yeah, why worry about it? You have enough to do. I mean, if you want to spend your whole day worrying about how others are pretentious and waste your day like that, then it's not there, you know, it's not good. Like that.
But Krishna said, you don't know where the pretension, he takes care of it.
Yeah, but Krishna will take care of it. Yeah? No, just behind. Then we'll come to you.
Forgive me for being worried, I don't have a little bit of
Did you write it down?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, great.
If we have a Jyotin from our lack of faith, etc. You say Krishna will help us continue like that, but how should we reverse this? If one is so degraded that he tries to see good qualities, we will actually only see bad. It seems artificial and thus will not work. And just hollow lip service. Can you say how to truly raise oneself from this degrading position and truly change one's way for the better and your prospects?
Okay. So you can all hear?
Yeah?
No? So he's saying is that, okay, let's say one has Duryodhana mentality and you find criticizing others. So how to correct that? Because if you just try to see good qualities and talk good qualities, then it may be artificial, it's just lip service like that. Lack of faith, yeah, okay. So now, the point is if one wants to develop a good quality, then one has to value it. Even if one doesn't have it, one values it. Just like you don't have an object, but you value it. So by that, you'll move in such a way that you progress towards getting it. Does that make sense? You don't have any prasad, you value it. So then, because you value it, then you will look for the opportunities by which you could gain it. Does that make sense? Means, without valuing something, you will not make any endeavor to get it. So the first thing is you have to value it. And so you can do that by contemplating it intellectually that it's a good thing. Then at least intellectually you've understood, yes, it's good, I may not have it. Then by taking shelter of Guru, Krishna and the Vaishnavas, then these things will come because it's all by desire. Anything we have is by desire. There's nothing that comes without desire. There's no situation that we're in that we haven't in some way desired it. So even we're faithless is because something's gone wrong. We say, I don't want to have anything to do with people anymore, or this or that. We've desired, that faithlessness. So then with time, we get the strength to be faithless. Because otherwise it may be hard to be faithless because, there's people and they're nice. But if we have enough experiences that are bad, then we have the courage to, no relationships work, right? I've had interaction with, 37 and a half people in my life and it didn't work, so therefore the other, 5 billion, whatever, 999 million, 900 and like that, then they're all useless. So, Krishna will give you that faith to be faithless. So you have to desire it. And practice, now let us say the kid, he wants to learn writing. So what he writes in the beginning is great. Right? It's going to be a bestseller. It's modeled by it, but outside that, it may not go past that. Bestseller on his mom's refrigerator. So it's, that's, so does that mean that it's hollow? No. If it's being done for the proper purpose, in the proper method, then it's considered, in that category. You consider it writing, even though, the D's and B's are all backwards and, all that. So it's still considered writing. And if they follow the process, they'll become a writer. Does that make sense? The relevance is that you're saying that if we try to practice seeing good qualities in that, even though it doesn't naturally come, that it will be hollow lip service. The point is it's easy to say, but first contemplate and see good qualities. You're only going to speak if you see them. he sees, they say something, oh, you're so humble, you're so this, you're so that, you memorized a few words out of the book. No, but you have to contemplate and think, what qualities do they have? Rather than what bad qualities they have, look at what good qualities. You can find it in everybody. Right? Dog is considered the lowest. You want to say somebody's low, you call them a dog, right? But there's five things to learn from a dog that they're exceptional in. Right? They're satisfied with whatever you give them to eat. You give them just one scrap, they're satisfied with that. You give them a full meal, they're satisfied. Whatever you give them, they're satisfied. Right? When they wake up, they're fully conscious. Yeah, instant. They can be deep sleep, and then you wake them up, bang, they're fully conscious, ready to act. That's a good quality, rather than wake up like that. You know, they're loyal, like that. They're actually chaste, if you think about it. Means they always work for the benefit of their master, they always serve the master. Anybody that is the master's friends or relatives or who is accepted by the master, they do, and they take on the same mood as the master. Right? Those are the four qualities of chastity. So that's why when they don't find it elsewhere, then men take shelter of dogs as their best friends. Right? Because they have it.
They are photographic as well.
Photographic.
Dogs. When you play with him, he remembers.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's part of the loyalty and other things like that. Yeah. So there's like that. There's some, but other qualities than, you know, the low class or uncultured. They don't have discrimination. You see, the list goes on. Therefore, the dogs. But still, there's something to gain from them. So that's the point, is the lowest person still has something that's useful. You know? There's something to gain from them. There may be only one thing. You might have a thief, but he's very meticulous about his work, or he plans nicely, or, you know, he works well with others, or, you know, there may be... So whatever it is, it's a quality that's useful. Maybe you don't use it for stealing, you use it in another area. Yeah.
So then you're saying to contemplate it, to get the brain working and contemplate it to see the good things.
Yeah.
And you say that the person already got a call.
Yeah. If you contemplate, then only you'll speak. If you just speak without contemplating, then it'll be hollow. Means Krishna is going to give you what you want. If you're qualified to get it now, you'll get it immediately. If you're not qualified, then it's going to take you a while. You have to get over the obstacles of it. Yeah, okay, we have to go. Okay, if you're in the rut, how do we get there? Now, see, it's important to take all the elements that we're discussing and put them together. So the foundation is, first you have to value that not criticizing, I mean, that criticizing isn't useful for you, and being able to see good qualities in others is. Right? If you take that as the first step, then you will contemplate others' good qualities. Try to find good qualities by them, but unless you value that, how you'll take the first step? Right? You're not going to take the step to try to contemplate others' good qualities unless you have the value that I should find them as opposed to finding the faults. And that's only going to come by desire. Because the jiva, their only independence is desire. So you can desire that, yeah, I should have that. I don't have it, but I should have that. Then it will start to move that way.
But, I mean,
you see that it doesn't work. In my eye, it doesn't, it's not going to hold it. It's not going to be converted. You're not going to get it to the other side. So, how do you, when I see it, it doesn't work.
You see, okay, you see a bridge and it doesn't work. So, why would you define that as criticism? No, okay. That's a question about faith and criticism. Okay, but now we don't have faith that this bridge will hold us, so it's a fault. So we can say that that's faithlessness and that's criticizing. But you have the concept of faith that there is such a thing as a bridge that will hold you, but this one's not it. Yeah, it's still a bridge, but I'm saying it's not the right bridge. But my point is he still has faith in bridges, otherwise why would he find this is not? Plus, it doesn't hold him, that's because it's a fact. It's not a criticism. Criticism means...
It's a fact.
Yeah, so that, why is that a criticism?
It's not a fact.
Yeah, so then that's not a good example.
Well, that's my question. It's pretty clear that there are two questions.
Okay, which came first, the chicken or the egg? The chicken. Eggs come from chickens. Yeah, so that means there was a human being that first had a chicken. And then after that, the chickens had eggs. Okay, you're not understanding. One, first you have to be qualified to understand. Two, you have to be able to follow a logical sequence of thought. You can't be like the dog and the tail. You root it in the desire for having the understanding. From there you can take the steps, but you always uproot that one and then just keep it going around. So you have to ask yourself the question, do you want an answer or not? Do you want to stop being confused, or the taste of being confused is so nice and gives such a good identity that it works for you? Yeah, so you know what I'm saying? You have to see, do you want an answer? That's where it starts. It starts from the desire to know. That's why human life starts from just the desire to know. That's all. So the same principle. Anything you want to start human life, you desire to know. You want to start faithfulness, you desire to have it. So if that's understood, then everything else has to make sense. Criticizing means making a comment about somebody that's not important, it's not necessary. It may be a fact or it may not be a fact. It's a matter of, this bridge is too weak to hold me. That's a fact. Ah, it's a useless bridge. But the cats go and dogs go over it fine. So it's not useless. But for you it's useless because your value is yourself, so therefore you see everything from that, so it's useless. Then it's criticism. But if it's working for someone else, then it's just a fact, it doesn't work for you. You know, like going out in the field and saying, you know, all this grass is not food. For you it's not food, but you know, a lot of other entities think it is. It's a valid point. It's a valid point. Here, okay, now like this. Do you want to figure this out or not?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you want to figure it out, then you have to start applying, you know, the how you say it? The intelligence that you have to the point. Could you tell the difference between a fact and fault finding? Can you tell the difference between this bridge is too weak for me to go over it, but it'll work for others who are lighter than me? So because it's a fact, I won't go over this bridge, I'll find a stronger bridge. But I have faith in the principle that bridges can take me across as long as it's strong. Yeah? And then just saying, yeah, use this bridge, yeah, it's a, you know. Okay, so then it's not criticism. It's being practical. So you have to contemplate and use your intelligence. So now take this and think about it. And if there's something more, write it down. Because then it'll be, means you're thinking, it will become solid, otherwise the mind will take it around. Okay?
The bridge can be tested.
Yeah, the bridge can be tested, or, yeah.
To see if all of this will be the same way to put it.
Yeah. So he's saying is that you can the bridge can be tested, because if others, you know, of your stature go through it, then maybe it looks to you like it's not, but if others have gone through it and it worked, then maybe there's some other consideration, you know. Maybe there's something underneath the bridge that you don't see, you know, that's giving it strength or like that. So he's making the point that it's always good to check very carefully, because you know, check with others, because maybe it does work, but we don't see it. Okay.
Yeah. My question follows on from what he
says. It follows on from what he says. Okay.
It's like, you're talking about subtle influences.
About subtle influence, yeah.
So, like, for example, you walk through the door, and you see that the Srimad Bhagavatam nature is like, you think that, oh, he's going to say something that's going to influence my consciousness in a bad way. So then you decide to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you sit down and you think where to sit. Because if I sit next to this person, then maybe I'll get some bad vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance this?
How do you balance trying to find out what is good or bad association?
You can take it too far.
You can take, okay. Means the example was given over, you come to the class and you see some, you know, weirdo, you know, some oversized chudder and some rag on his head. You think maybe he's going to say something weird, you know. Where are you going to sit? Are you going to sit down next to, you know, maybe you don't want to sit with this one, they may get out of weird body. So, okay. But the point is it has to be based on something. Right? It means your perception has to be based on some experience that actually gives the result that you're talking about. And the result that it's talking about has to be compared against Shastra. So if every time you've gone to this person's class, they've said something that annoys you, then there's a good chance that today they'll also say something that annoys you. Or every time you stop next to this devotee, then it's always turned weird. So then you know, then you can say yes. Or if there's others that are like-minded as you and they've had the same experience, then by hearing from them, then you can do it like that. But to just see them and think they look weird or there's something strange or it might be, maybe, what, ooh, possibly, then that's Jainism. Jainism means what if. Oh, okay. So then do we decide we hear something we don't like, and so do we decide never to go to the class again?
How sensitive?
Well, the thing is how sensitive should we be? Okay, they said something weird in the class, you didn't like it. Now, you could always find out, do they always say something weird in the class? Ask others, because if that's the only class you've been, then you find out from others. You know, people that you trust will understand what you're talking about. And if they say, yeah, yeah, they always go to these funny classes, then you know. If they say, no, no, it's this and that, then it may be you've just perceived what they said in a funny way. Maybe they have said something funny, maybe you've perceived it as funny. You know, because there may be some connection that they're making that you didn't catch. So then it seems strange, something's missing, something, you know, like that. So then one would have to be more analytical. Because the point is you have to decide, do you want to work just on the vibe, or do you want to have some foundation to it? You know, like that.
Mark, how does this lead to this seeing the good in others, because if we are not supposed to see the good in others, then really we shouldn't be seeing something bad, or should we see something bad?
Okay, we're only supposed to see the good in others, so should we see anything bad? Or we shouldn't see anything bad, or can't like this. See, the point is it's not that one doesn't see bad, because you, if you have a standard of what's good, then something that's against that standard will be automatically seen as not good. But now you have the point whether you need to criticize that person, or just avoid that aspect. Right? Like a you're walking out of the building and walking up the path, there's a dog walking the other way. Now, you know that dogs are dirty, but you have to go, dirty dog, stinky dog, like that, and that's your reason that you're going to stay out of the way. Or you just know that dogs are dirty, so you just make sure you don't touch the dog. You know what I'm saying? You know, so you go out and somebody's dropped some garbage in it, you have to go up and go, it's that, you know, to not step in it, you know. So the point is you can see what's good and what's bad, but because you want what's good, therefore you follow that and avoid what's bad. But you don't have to criticize it. Means, but to create the sense of what's good and the value for it, and to give up something that's useless, you have to contemplate how it's useless. So the point is what's good and bad. Point is it's either valuable or useless. Valuable means it will get you something. Useless means it won't get you something. So every action has a goal. So something's bad because it's useless for getting you that goal. And something's good because it's useful to get you that goal. Now, depending on how far ahead you set that goal, then it will be your different levels of consciousness. It will be considered more elevated perspective or a less elevated perspective. So therefore, it may get you something here, but farther down the line, you lose. So therefore, if you look at the farther thing, you may leave this one because you can gain something farther. So then what would be good here is actually not good in the bigger picture. You know what I'm saying? So that you have to see. So that's the broad. So then if your value is Krishna, your goal is Krishna, then what's going to please Krishna? Yeah. So then you're saying Krishna is everywhere. So therefore, then you connect, you see it in relationship to Krishna. Right? Then you'll decide what's good and bad compared to that. That's the ultimate method of seeing good and bad. But otherwise, then you see it according to whatever mundane thing you want. Now, if you want to get a good material situation for Krishna, you've decided that that's good for Krishna. So therefore, then it comes from Krishna to that, from that down to the situation now. So that spiritual connection is there. If you just see, it's good for this situation, I'll get what I want, but there's no connection to Krishna, then it's only mundane, it doesn't have anything spiritual. Yeah. Means, yeah, we are the one that disconnects ourselves from Krishna because Krishna is always there, and as we choose to ignore him. Otherwise, you can't not be connected to Krishna. That's why this material world is an illusion. Because we think we're disconnected from Krishna, but Krishna is everything. I like these cartoons, but the thing is they make sound, they have the shape, that's all Krishna. So actually, it's Krishna's qualities I'm attracted to. But because I don't see it in relationship to Krishna, it's not Krishna. Krishna says, I am in everything, but there it's not in me. Right? Or he'll say, everything is in me, but I am not in it. Either way you can look is that everything is his energy, so you're attracted to it. Like you see a new building, it looks shiny and nice, that shiny and niceness is Krishna. But you're only attracted to the building, so you don't actually take it all the way back to Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is not in it. You'll become attracted to that building and only get material attraction. But if you think that building is so nice and actually Krishna is the most, you see it through there. Is that because it's got the newness, the freshness, and Krishna is new and fresh? So that's why it looks good. Then you'll purify yourself of the attraction to nice buildings and attract and connect yourself to Krishna. So for preachers, then they can see where it's going to preach better or not. So the Prabhupada seemed to preach to everyone. Yes, but at the same time, he did go to New York. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did send his people to London. Because at that time, London was the place, not New York. When Prabhupada went, New York is the place. You know, what happens there, people follow. He was in Jhansi. You know. There's a lot of self-sacrifice. You're not thinking about yourself. Now you're starting to get it. That's the whole point. Preaching means is you're doing it for someone else. That's why it's called Param Upakar. Upakar means welfare work, and Param means the supreme. So the supreme welfare is distributing Krishna consciousness. Even if you ruin your own spiritual life, no, it means that wouldn't be, that's not how it works. Because then that means then that's how is that preaching? You know? Okay. You're saying, Prabhupada said, let me go to hell, but let everybody else be saved. Now the point is now when Prabhupada goes, if Prabhupada went to hell, he wouldn't be Krishna conscious then. See, be careful what you say. Ramanuja. Okay, so now Ramanuja's guru giving him the mantra saying it's secret, Ramanuja giving to everybody. Okay, now Ramanuja, his going out and telling everybody was from the platform of Pancharatra or Bhagavad. Okay, his guru gave him the mantra, that was in the platform of Bhagavad or Pancharatra. Okay, so did Ramanuja do anything wrong? No. So that's the point, is that if you can see that bigger picture, the smaller pictures are just within it. Prabhupada said if you have 100 rupees, all your 1 rupee problems are solved. So that's the thing, is that view, that vision, that depth, that's what's there, that's what's important. So, but whatever it is, then within whatever is the limit of your ability to see, judge it according to that, not something less. So the new devotee may have a very small vision, but it should be within that. It shouldn't be less than that. You know, and then by doing that, then it will expand. So you can remember Krishna all the time. What preaching you do that you can't remember Krishna? But that's, you'll not remember Krishna whether you're preaching or not. It's very difficult to remember Krishna. But why you're out on the street? You're out there at that, and then you see it. So the point is if by going out in the street, one becomes bewildered, find some service that one doesn't become bewildered until one's strong enough to go out on the street. That's what it said, Prabhupada mentions. Beginning in the brahmachari is separated from women and household life because then he can get the view on it and control the senses. But then later, when he's more mature, then when he's within that circle, it doesn't bother him. So that's the whole point. If the senses are too agitated, so the intellect can't be used, then you separate it. And then by that, then you see the difference and you contemplate it. Right? Then you're able to then deal with it and then because there's nothing to gain. All about? Yeah, that's the thing. It always comes back to ourselves. That's the secret. You know, it's called self-realization. Right? It starts with the self. So self means, Atma means the body. It means the mind. It means the senses, the ego, and the soul. So all these things have to be known. Then you know yourself. Otherwise you don't. So you have to know what is your conditioned nature, what is its limit, what can it do, what can't it do. And then situate yourself so it's engaged properly. That makes sense?
You talk about this relationship with Shrimad. I think the biggest problem, the biggest disappointment with spirituality is when the spiritual master might leave or move, and then you might be disappointed by the Krishna.
Okay, so your biggest disappointment means there a point after this? How do you go? How do you continue? Okay, how do you continue in spiritual life if you have the, you know, the disappointment, saying the greatest disappointment, you know, in relationships would be the spiritual master goes away, and then one may even doubt Krishna. Okay, now there's a principle here, like we said before, is the person is doubting the bridge, but he doesn't doubt the concept of bridges. So if in the equation you doubt Krishna in it, that means you doubt the concept of guru also. And if you look, you probably doubt the concept of father, the concept of any other kind of authority, leader, manager that's above you. Like that. You'll doubt all those also. And you'll probably find that if you take it and keep going with it, others below you doubt you. Because you doubt. So the point is if you doubt Krishna, that means that there's something, that there's a conditioned aspect there, it's not spiritual. It means you have a problem with authority. Otherwise that wouldn't come up. Why would you doubt Krishna? Krishna is God. Guru is a principle. Krishna is the ultimate guru. You know, it's just like the bus didn't come, so does that mean now the whole state bus system you doubt? The bus had a flat tire. So does that mean now the whole, you know, state transport system is you know, deleted from your mind? So that's the whole point is that you're benefited by another living entity, and that other living entity is an individual. That's why there's a relationship and why there's gratefulness. But if you consider that I deserve a guru and I deserve that everything should work perfectly, then one may have problem, because one may not be grateful, one may have difficulty in this way. Point is the guru falls, there's also the point is, did you deserve a guru? That point is also made. So that becomes a shock, because it's really easy to find fault in others, it's very hard to find in ourselves. Because even the guru fall, that doesn't necessarily mean, what does that have to shake your faith? Right? You're at one end of the city, you gotta get to the other, you get in a taxi, you get in, it takes you two blocks and then breaks down. And that's it. Forget it. No taxis. Just get out, sit on the curb. Or you just hail another taxi and keep going. Right? And because it only took you two blocks, then you sit there, useless taxi. And no, you still pay them for the two blocks. Okay, this guru took me this far. We're grateful for that. Now we look around, who can take us farther? But if we doubt Krishna, it means we have doubt in the whole process. Both material and spiritual. So you can't get. What if one can't get rid of the doubting Krishna? Oh, how to restart the whole. Well, you have to. Okay, how to restart the faith that Krishna. First, you have to look at is the principle of authority okay? Is that an okay thing? is the principle of hearing from authority the best method. You know what I mean? It's just like you take, by definition, God's the first person who's created everything. So then that means, you know, he's not going to go away. Right? You know, we're kind of like stuck with that one. You know? And then if we have faith that we're soul and we're not the body and all that, then what are we going to do as soul? Do we belong here? Do we analyze we don't belong here? And it sounds like the best place is the spiritual world. Okay, but now the spiritual world has come from Krishna, and what makes the spiritual world special is that everybody there recognizes God. And if we look at all the pastimes, they seem to be going fine. Everybody's happy. Even if there's situations that on the material platform we would consider bad, still it's wonderful. Right? So then we can look at it, so it can't be all that bad. Now, if either that person who's created it or one of his associates then tells us how we can get there, right? And we follow that process, even if there's some difficulties, it doesn't mean that that ultimate goal has no meaning. Does that make sense? Yes, right. Yeah, so that's the whole point. If they're having any point with anything, just go back. And then, yeah, just see, because the point is sambandha is the thing. From sambandha you get prayojana. Krishna is the goal. Surrender to guru, if that's abhideya. But we are servant of Krishna. Krishna is God. Developing love for him is our goal. We're going to get that through guru. Guru Sattva Shastra, that's where we're going to get it. So then, if we have something wrong there, that means there's something wrong in the sambandha. So that means we have to go back and reanalyze, are we solid in all our foundational understandings of the philosophy? You know, if we're solid, then great. You know, then we won't have this doubt. Because from desire comes attachment, right? From sambandha comes prayojana. Then you make the abhideya to get it.
And then you can make offense to it and destroy your faith.
Yeah, that's fair.
What if the point of faithlessness in your spiritual life came up because of your past life before your initiation period? Suppose, like, there's some money you already read because you've had bad samadhi in your non-devotional life. And then, because the principle is the same, of samadhi in spiritual life, in spiritual life.
Okay.
Because you cannot, if you cannot really, the hope you have, you cannot really fix it.
Okay, so then, due to our life previous to coming to Krishna consciousness, then it wasn't good, relationships didn't work, and we don't really have faith in relationships. So therefore, it's hard to put one's relationship in. Devotees and Krishna is also, it's a relationship. But the point is like what we meant before, is atheist means he's not a theist. So the point is we don't have faith in relationships, but that doesn't mean that relationships are something we can get away from. How do you gain it in spiritual life if you don't have the experience? Through the intellect. In other words, what you haven't experienced, you first is the intellectualizing. So if it makes sense, then you endeavor for it. And then by the endeavor, then you'll start to get the good experience. So most likely, there was bad experience before because the interaction wasn't right. Maybe it's not from this life, maybe in the last life, therefore you got it. So whatever you're getting is what you've done. Is the intellect the only way to get realization? No, the intellect isn't a way, it's part of the way. You intellectualize on it so you understand it, you contemplate it so you go deeply into it, and you practice it with that knowledge. That will give you the realization. Then the realization means the mind's accepted it.
What about
Understanding means the intelligence has pointed out that this is better than that. But only when the mind accepts it, that's called realization. So there's a difference between realization and understanding.
Normally people lack of faith in people because we want to hide our back to Krishna. Krishna's words are already included
in his faith, right? Yeah, yeah, one has to do it. Because the point is there is the inherent need to interact with people. Right? We have that inherent need. So because of that, then we may have been negative, so therefore rejected it. But still, the inherent need is still there. It's just we haven't had a good experience. So intellectually, we should understand that need is still valid, and relationships still is a valid principle. I may not have had a good experience, but the principle of relationships is still valid. And other people are having it, and it's working. I haven't found it to work. But it doesn't mean that it doesn't work. So if that's there, then we'll be able to go on. And until we get it to work, we'll find out from others how it works for them. We'll read the scriptures, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And this way, then, we will gain. Does that make sense? Okay, so last question. Foundational to dealing with authority. First is respect. Second would be following of instructions. You know, following meaning practicing. Third would be never becoming familiar that you become equal or greater. Is even though it may be informal, it's friendly, but you're always a touch below. There's always that slight difference is kept. Then the relationship will work. That would be the main. To enhance that, you need control of the senses. You need regulation. Study of scriptures, because that's authority. So by associating with that authority, just like if you associate with any element of a particular rasa, it will enhance all the others. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, okay, you have a temple president, but you also have the Sankirtan leader. Now, if you develop a good relationship with the Sankirtan leader, that enhances the concept of relationship with authority. Therefore, it will actually help your relationship with the temple president. Right? Yeah, if there's a weakness of one because of the conditioned nature, just find another element within the line and catch there. But if you ever develop no faith in Krishna, then you lose the whole thing all the way down. Like that. So therefore you have to start, see that it's there, and at least intellectually accept. Because if that's done, that's the first step. Because the tato brahmatikasa means you're inquiring, it doesn't mean you realize. You inquire, so that's where it starts. You inquire, why should I? What's the benefit? What is the situation? Who am I? Right. Then it starts to make some sense.
Maharaj, we also enter because we challenge the Supreme Authority.
Yeah.
Why we should not work with authority? We have to accept any authority we will not respect the Supreme Authority.
So that's it's actually our problem. That's why human life starts from brahmacharya. Brahmacharya means acceptance of authority. That's the main principle that's gone. Acceptance of authority through teacher, acceptance of authority through the scriptures. Acceptance of authority means there's something higher, there's a higher principle. There's God or Brahman or Paramatma, something higher.
So that's the principle. If that's accepted, then all relationships can happen, because from, if that was there, then you can reverse it. And the meaning between is friendship. If you accept authority, you can be an authority. So automatically, by accepting the senior, then when you become senior, you can take care of junior. If you accept a teacher, you can become one. You accept your parents, you can become one. Right? And then if those two are in place, friendship is easy. You know, because it's just partly in between. That makes sense. I think we should end here. Getting late today. Srila Prabhupada ki, Salavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityananda.